This is a People First Radio podcast.
Housing co-ops. Come for the affordability, stay for the community. That's what Tom Armstrong says is the experience of many people living in housing co-ops in the province of British Columbia. Armstrong is the CEO of the Cooperative Housing Federation of BC, as well as the Community Land Trust Foundation of BC. He spoke with me to explain what exactly housing co-ops are, how they work, and the role they're playing in the housing sector in BC today. To begin, I think a lot of people might be familiar with at least the name of housing co-ops, but what exactly is a housing co-op and how does it work?
Well, housing co-ops are what I like to call the best kept secret in the Canadian housing ecosystem. They're kind of that midpoint between owning and renting. So a housing co-op is really just a legal association. It's incorporated under the Cooperative Association Act of BC. And the association's members are the residents of the housing that it owns. So a member of a housing co-op is both a tenant and a landlord, so a collective owner of housing that's primarily operated in BC and for that matter in Canada on a nonprofit basis. So the goal of living in a housing co-op is not to accumulate equity, it's to achieve permanent affordability and security of tenure.
So how can someone join a housing co-op?
The process is simple. The outcome is not so simple because the co-ops are so popular among their members that the waiting lists are quite often longer than our two arms put together. And many waiting lists have in fact been closed because they're so long. But members or prospective members apply. Their application is considered by a board of directors or a management company to make sure it's a fit for household size and income and a commitment to a cooperative community. And then to move into a co-op, you purchase a membership share, which really takes the place of a first and last month's rent or damage deposit if you compare it to the rental market. And once you're accepted, you move in, and then you can stay in the co-op as long as it continues to meet your needs and as long as you comply with the rules and regulations that you have a vote on as a member of the co-op. That's the other key distinction between the rental market and the co-op housing sector is that members govern their own housing on a one-member, one-vote basis. So, they elect a board of directors, they set the rules, they make the policies, they contribute to the community. So it's more than just a roof over your head. It's an opportunity to be part of a diverse, supportive community where you can gain life skills and job skills and participate really in the life of a larger unit than your own household.
Talking about that roof over your head, though, what are the actual buildings or what's the physical setup of co-ops? Are they, would we think of like a mid-rise apartment building, or could they be even a conglomeration of detached houses?
Yeah, if you can think of a housing form, there's a co-op somewhere in BC and in Canada to match it. So there are high rises downtown, mid rises elsewhere, heritage buildings, row townhomes, and every option from very low to very high density living depends primarily on when the co-op was built or acquired. But it accommodates a very wide variety of housing forms. And that's one of the things that makes it attractive to people of very different incomes and very different household compositions and family sizes.
Do co-ops that exist now, do they have the ability to expand? Can they buy new property? Can you tell me a little bit about how that process would work?
Yeah, that's a great question because that's exactly what we're engaged in right now. One of the subsidiary operations of the Co-op Housing Federation is a social purpose real estate developer known as the Community Land Trust Foundation. And the Community Land Trust acquires land or housing, develops it, redevelops it, expands it to grow the co-op housing movement beyond the households that it serves today. So if a co-op has a piece of land, quite often when the buildings come to the end of their useful lives, that site can be redeveloped to sometimes to double and triple the number of homes on the site. We're always looking for contributions of land from municipalities. Those are, you know, our most promising partnerships are with municipal councils that have a bank of land that they want to deploy to create affordable housing, and we become kind of a go-to partner for municipalities who want to do that.
So co-op housing is not like government or public housing. It's completely different from, say, BC housing, but it's an alternative for municipalities looking to create affordable housing. One option they have is to partner with co-ops.
Yes. In fact, you know, the best example I can think of recently is, well, if you go back to 2014, the city of Vancouver asked itself if it entered into a partnership with a community land trust, could it achieve affordability by donating the land? So we acquired four sites from the city. We leased them for 99 years for like $10. And we built the sites out to now hold 358 homes across the four sites. And those homes now are in the range of 65 to 75% of the prevailing market rents in the surrounding area. So that led to a real expansion of that partnership idea. And the next iteration of that was to acquire seven sites from the city. And we're in the process of building them out with a combination of co-op, nonprofit, and indigenous partners to create housing across a very wide continuum of households, incomes, and other characteristics. So it's proving to be a very flexible development model. And municipal councils with an interest in land can really achieve a return on investment in affordability and security of tenure beyond any kind of partnership they could imagine with a private sector developer.
So what is the capacity of co-ops to take on or the scale at which they could take on some of these projects you just described?
Well, an individual co-op is not very well placed to do that. And that's why our members through the Co-op Housing Federation of BC support the use of a community land trust model to do that. So, you know, we've been able to hire professionals who can take on that kind of real estate development project, either with an existing co-op or on a bare piece of land to create a new co-op. And that's the most promising form of development that we've been able to put into the market.
And turning back to the individual level, you mentioned one co-op in Vancouver had rents at about 65 to 70% of the market rates. In general, What is the cost of living in a co-op on average?
It really depends on how old the co-op is. So most of the there are about 265 nonprofit housing co-ops in BC, just shy of 15,000 homes. And the vast majority of them were developed under a series of federal co-op housing programs that began in 1973 and wrapped up in 1992. So the older the co-op is, the more affordable it is relative to market rents in the surrounding area, because they've been operating what's essentially a not-for-profit housing business for, you know, sometimes three and four decades. So a co-op only has to meet its costs, you know, whatever debt service it's responsible for, its operating costs and allocations to capital reserves to provide for the upkeep of the asset over time. They don't have to return an investment to a shareholder. They don't have to return a profit to a landlord. So that's how housing charges fall relative to market. So in many co-ops, you'll find members paying, you know, if you compare to the surrounding area, again, 60 to 70% of market rents, which when you take into account the real disconnection we've seen over the last couple of decades between median incomes and market rents, that's a critical piece of the affordability infrastructure in our housing market.
I'm wondering about the idea of equity co-ops. Are they something that exist as well?
You know, there are a few equity co-ops in BC. there are some in Canada. It's a much more popular model in the U.S. and in some European and Scandinavian countries. In Canada, and particularly in BC, the equity co-op model kind of got shouldered aside by the strata model because it's the way stratas or condos are financed, they're a lot more attractive to a bank or a lender than than an equity co-op. So, you know, where you might have seen equity co-ops become a more dominant piece of the housing market, you really see the growth of the strata market as an alternative. There are some, you know, before there was a strata act or even a co-op act, some people did create companies that bought or built housing, and they own shares in the company, and they operate in many respects very much like a co-op. So that, you know, that's really the more common iteration of what you might call an equity co-op. But there just aren't very many of them.
And last week, the CHFBC held an Island Education Day with the theme of rebuilding community. Could you talk a little bit about how co-ops contribute to a sense of community?
Yeah, it's very. I mean, we did have the Education Day built around that theme because, you know, we have been hearing from our members that they really have struggled over the last couple of years, you know, because of the restrictions that have been placed on gathering, you know, due to the pandemic. They really felt a need to like reconnect with their friends and their neighbors. And I'm guessing that members of housing co-ops felt that disconnection more acutely than many other people, because co-ops are built around that notion of community. If you ask somebody who just moved into a co-op why they moved in, why they chose the co-op as a place to live, they would probably say they were attracted by the affordability. But if you ask the same person 5 years or 10 years later why they stay in their co-op, they would say it's because of the security of tenure in the community that they find themselves a key part of. And that's really, you know, when you move into a co-op, you're because you become a member and a nonprofit shareholder, your neighbor is not just your neighbor, somebody you pass on the street. They're your business partner. You know, they're the member, you're a fellow member in a co-op with a mission to create not just affordable housing, but to create that sense of community that comes from being part of a common enterprise. And that's really what co-ops have contributed to, that sense of community, that concern for the broader community beyond the, you know, the walls of the individual co-op. And that's really what keeps people there. It's really the reason that it's so difficult to get in to a co-op when there's not a construction boom on, because people move in and they stay because it's such an attractive model. And it's such a good fit for people, no matter how old they are, how big their household is, what their income is. There's a place for you in a housing co-op, no matter what your household looks like.
So you've talked about the popularity of co-ops. You've talked about the affordability of co-ops. Are there any challenges co-ops are facing right now?
You know, they are. And that's it's important to be upfront and candid about that. Co-ops are communities just like every other community. And you know, they struggle sometimes with the responsibility of keeping the buildings in good condition over time, as that asset starts to, you know, wear out as it comes to the end of its useful life or hits a point in its life cycle where major capital components need to be replaced. You know, co-ops are governed by very well-meaning volunteers with a general capacity to govern their community and their co-op. And they often have trouble sourcing the expertise they need to keep the buildings in the kind of shape they would want to keep living in. But there are, you know, other social issues as well. We spend a lot of time these days engaging our members in conversations about what real equity and inclusion means in a co-op community for a movement that prides itself on a set of principles that is connected to community. We've been asking ourselves, you know, who's excluded from that by the privilege we already have to live in the homes we live in. And that's proving to be quite a challenging conversation, because people generally don't turn their attention to those issues when they're feeling pretty comfortable about their own housing. And we're finding that there's a lot of energy around conversations like, you know, what does a reconciliation and a decolonization agenda look like in a co-op community? What does an anti-racism strategy look like in a co-op community? And those, you know, those conversations are difficult, they're challenging, and we're finding our members have a lot of appetite for them. So, you know, we look forward to the next couple of years when that's an explicit part of the Federation Board's strategic vision, which is to create communities where the sense of belonging extends to everybody and not just the core group in the community.
You alluded to the future there. What is the outlook for co-ops in BC over the next 5 or 10 years?
You know, I've never been more optimistic than I am now because, you know, for years we couldn't figure out how to create an engine for growth and renewal in the co-op housing sector. And with the emergence of the community land trust model, we found that we can actually take responsibility for our own redevelopment and renewal and our own expansion to extend the benefits of co-op living to people who've never had a chance to move into a co-op home of their own. So I think you're going to see the co-op housing movement grow as every level of government, especially municipal governments, come to see the co-op housing sector as a partner they can rely on to deliver the outcomes they're looking for in a housing market where so many people are marginalized and excluded. So I think the future is full of nothing but promise for housing co-ops, not just in BC, but across Canada.
If someone is listening to this and wants to learn more, maybe even apply to join a housing co-op, where can they go for more information?
Our website is a great place to start, chf.bc.ca. There's a Find a Co-op tracker and all kinds of information on the resources we make available to our members. So that would be the best place to start.
Anything else you think people need to know about co-ops?
No, I think, you know, what I would say to people is if you've ever wondered what it would be like to live in a co-op and you know, what kind of co-op might be available in your area, check us out at chf.bc.ca. Take that step. And you could find that your forever home is just a click of the mouse away.
Tom Armstrong, thank you very much for taking some time to speak with me today.
My pleasure.
Tom Armstrong is the CEO of both the Cooperative Housing Federation and the Community Land Trust Foundation of British Columbia.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.